Hello, everyone. I'm George Myland. Welcome back. You see me bald now. Anyway, so this is the anniversary of the Battle of Waterloo. Well, not today, 2 days ago. I can't remember why I was so busy that day and able to do it. So it was a Sunday, the 18th, 1815. And of course, it's the most resounding victory by an Irish general ever. So that is Arthur Wellesley. Who then got the title Duke of Wellington. And incidentally, they changed their name to Wellesley because some distant relative, I think it was an inheritance thing. Actually, his surname had been Colley. And there's a Fine Gael politician in Ireland, prominent in the 50s and 60s, George Colley, who was some sort of collateral descendant of his. So although the Wellesleys, the Colleys, had been resident in Ireland for centuries, they were almost entirely of English stock. But surely by the 18th century, they were Irish just through absorption. Now, there's this apocryphal claim that the Duke of Wellington had asked whether he's Irish and said, no, if a horse is born at a donkey's stable, it's not a donkey. As in, if an Englishman happened to be born in Ireland, that doesn't make him Irish. But there's actually no proof he said that. That was made up decades after his death. I don't know it to be false. But put it this way, it's unproven at best. It's unlikely to be true. When he went to a French military academy as a teenager, he wrote that he was un gentilhomme d'Irlande, a gentleman of Ireland, and so on. So possibly born in Dublin, there's a plaque on the house, or possibly born at their castle in County Meath. And indeed, he was a member of Parliament for Trim. So he was part of a Church of Ireland family. Now, just because he was a fantastic general doesn't mean we have to agree with him on everything or indeed on anything. And he initially had been against Catholic emancipation. So the majority of Irishmen, that's about 70% of us, ought to be denied the right to be elected to Parliament or the higher ranks in the army, the navy, on the basis of religious denomination. You'd have to pass the Test Act, as in swear an oath to recognise the monarch as the rightful head of the church. And Catholics, being Roman Catholics, saying we can't do this because the Pope is the rightful head of the church. I mean, the Church of Ireland, Church of England, so forth, they're not proper churches at all. But anyway, back to the battle. Is after Napoleon's 100 days. Napoleon had been defeated in 1814. He'd abdicated at Fontainebleau, just south of Paris, and wept, as he said to the Imperial Guard, and whispered, "I shall return before the violets bloom again." Papa Violette, they called him, exiled to the island of Elba, off the coast of Italy. I'd really like to go to that Tuscan island. Allowed to take 1,000 troops with him, and indeed to govern the island. But then he heard rumours about him possibly being moved further away, maybe as far as St. Helena, and decided to make a comeback. Was he sectarian? I suppose he was, because that was the mindset at the time. He's an 18th century person. We can't judge him by 21st century standards. The things that we believe today, do you really think those would be socially acceptable 250 years from now? Things which are completely uncontroversial might become highly contentious. And okay, in the Duke of Wellington's time, there were people who were anti-sectarian, and that was a good thing. Now, I'm a firm unionist, but I do have some sympathy for the United Irishmen. This is not 1798. The situation is radically dissimilar now. The real intellectual breakthrough of the French Revolution was equality, which up until then people had scarcely proposed and people thought was literally insane. More friendly to the Irish Anglicans. I mean, maybe at the time, because the English Anglicans were secure because they were majority in England and indeed in the British Isles, or at least, if not with all Anglicans, with fellow Protestants, Scots, Presbyterians, other types of Protestants in Ireland and in Great Britain. So the Church of Ireland had 20% of the population maximum, probably fewer, because of course there are other Protestants outside the Church of Ireland, for instance, Baptist, Presbyterians, and so forth. But back to the subject. Napoleon had landed at Golfe Juan on La Côte d'Azur and then marched towards Grenoble. The morbidly obese King Louis XVIII sent troops to stop him. And then he had very few soldiers with him. So Napoleon opened his overcoat saying, "Shoot me." They'd all gone over to him. The gates of Grenoble torn down, laid at his feet, marched onto Paris. And that's when Louis XVIII hightailed it out of there. He got back to Paris. Not everyone was happy to see him. They knew this meant war. Napoleon had realized that by 1815, the former allies of those coalitions, they would fall out squabbling with each other about boundaries and stuff like that. And indeed that happened. So the way to do was defeat them piecemeal, and then the others maybe stay neutral and accept him. But they that but so they all said, no, we're not having this. So they got to defeat them fast before they can all gather an army so large it couldn't possibly be defeated. stop supporting Ulster Presbyterians. Well, I think it was a minority thing amongst Ulster Presbyterians, even in 1798. I suppose their synod passed resolutions condemning it, but it was a significant minority. I mean, by the late 19th century, that was gone. There was Roaring Hannah in the 1840s. Look at Belfast Harbour and be a repealer if you can, so he said, about saying we mustn't repeal Home Rule. All right, the one who personifies this is John Miller Andrews, Prime Minister of Northern Ireland 1940 to 43, being the great grandson of Dr. William Drennan, who was one of the revolutionaries of 1798, and indeed had lost his life in the process. So going back to Waterloo, so he gets back to France, and one of the things he found time to do is that he said, we're going to bring back slavery in the Caribbean. So don't think Napoleon was actually someone in favor of human rights. He wasn't anti-Semitic. He believed in emancipation of Jews, but he was viciously negrophobic, partly because his first wife, the love of his life, Josephine, had been born in the Caribbean in a French white planter family, and was a totally racialist. And one of the reasons he lost his Napoleonic Wars, he sends thousands of troops to Haiti to try and force the people of Haiti back into thraldom, but they had defeated him. Actually, larger yellow fever defeated his troops. So coming back to this, the march into what's now Belgium, then it was the Netherlands to defeat the Dutch, the British, and some of the German states. Remember, Germany then being over 360 states. Can we even say countries? There's a whole Waterloo campaign, the battles of Quatre Bras, and I can't even remember the other one. So that's why, and now the Duke of Wellington had a slight numerical majority. So in the order of battle, he had a William, Prince of Orange, on his side. The thing is, the Prussian general Blücher was advancing from the east. Napoleon had his Armée du Nord, over 74,000 troops, whereas the Allies had slightly higher. There's the King's German Legion. Remember, George the Third was also the King of Hanover in northwest Germany, and so forth. So they're roughly or almost equal numbers of British and non-British troops, Dutch and Germans on the other sides. So troops from Brunswick as well, Nassau and other German states. So Napoleon, he was suffering from piles, which affected his performance. Cranky, just like at Borodina, when he won that battle with difficulty, west of Moscow. And the thing is, unseasonable rain, so he'd waited a few hours for the dry to, gr ground to dry out before he could move his battery of cannon forward. Always believed in having a grand battery in the middle, and he was becoming predictable. So some of his troops off to the east to try and hold off the Prussians, so Napoleon could have numerical superiority, which he didn't manage, but it's cl but we're close to equality. The other thing is La Haie Sainte fight over that, and Le Hougoumont, these two farms in the middle, which really slowed him down. And time was not on his side because Blücher had defeated the French troops under Grouchy to the east. And towards evening, they see some troops on the eastern horizon. And what is that straining their eyes in the twilight? Is that the navy blue of the French army, or is that the Prussian black uniform? It's the Prussians. And by this time, it was all over. He failed to drive Wellington off that ridge that blocked the road to Brussels. Now he was already slightly outnumbered. He was going to be seriously outnumbered, about 3-2, and possibly even enveloped. So they suffered high casualties. And his Ney had troops charging unbroken squares of infantry, and that just doesn't work, because horses also won't jump into a forest of bayonets. So, you may, if you force them into squares, the infantry, then bring up the horse artillery to bombard the squares that you can't miss, and so on. So that was it. Napoleon had lost, his troops retreated. He took a vial of poison, he'd carried them for years, but it had degraded over the years and didn't kill him. Got back to Paris, mulled over what to do, and actually then he'd abdicated. And his Imperial Guard had broken and run for the very first time, his crack troops. So he had this elite regiment that the Imperial Guard, possibly it was a mistake to have the Imperial Guard, because they would have been excellent the NCOs of other regiments, and they grouped them all together. But when the Imperial Guard, when their discipline went, well, that was it. Morale collapsed at that point. So then he was surrendered to the British, and he was brought to the coast of the United Kingdom, somewhere like Cornwall. People come out in their little rowing boats to see him on his ship, his HMS Bellerophon, and sent to St. Helena, where he died 7 years later. Okay, so they're from, Wellesley's father was professor of music at Trinity College Dublin. He went to White's Academy there on Grafton Street. So he spent the rest of his life in England. You can go to Apsley House, or Number One London is house, and was a major figure in the Tory party. Was briefly prime minister, the Iron Duke, not as in determination, but he had to put iron shutters on his windows to stop them being smashed by mobs, so furious with his reactionary stance. so lived on to the 1850s. It was famous as the Hoo Hoo administration. When he was half deaf towards the end, they kept announcing, the cabinet minister saying, who? Didn't recognize the names. He died in the 1850s, and Wellington College for the Sons of Army Officers was founded in honor of him on the suggestion of Prince Albert. There's Wellington School in the town of Wellington, which is not in honor of the Duke of Wellington. So, yeah. So what connection did he have with the town of Wellington? It's somewhere in southwest England, in Somerset, because normally got a title relating to a place where they had a major estate. Remember, but he'd made his name in India, where his elder brother, the Marquess of Wellesley, was the Governor General of the 1790s, winning various battles such as Seringapatam, then the Peninsular War, as in the Iberia, fighting in Spain against the French there, when Napoleon put his elder brother on the throne of Spain as King Joseph and drave him out. So yeah, anything that worse than a battle won is a battle lost. Wellesley had said that Napoleon's presence at the battlefield was worth 40,000 men. It was such a morale booster to Napoleon. But Napoleon was becoming predictable by the 1815. By 1815, Wellesley had learnt to read his tactics to spread out his troops so he couldn't be surrounded, but not too much so they couldn't be broken through. And I tried to war game it from Napoleon's perspective, and there really isn't a way, because to surround them, to go so far around, there aren't really any weak points. Each unit can support each other, and so on. You're attacking up rising ground. The enemy's got a slight advantage in everything, in numbers of infantry and cavalry and artillery, and they're less tired, and again, you can't play for time, because if they stall, it's going to work for them because they got reinforcements coming from the east. Why is he not loved? I mean, I suppose people don't like to recognize that we're very imperialist, because I suppose eventually Republicans got their way, and Robert Emmet was a Republican. I mean, Wellesley was a bad person in a way in being sectarian, and Emmet was right on that. Of course, no one should be discriminated on the basis of his religious denomination, but Emmet was a man of his time. He never said there should be equality for women, because it'd been scarcely even suggested in those days. Right. Thank you so much for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, PayPal, georgecallan7 at gmail.com. Goodbye.